Welcome to Age Innovators, the series from the Healthy Aging Challenge community of practice, in which we spotlight pioneering innovations in longevity. We ask leading researchers and innovators what inspired their work and how it has the potential to impact people's lives. I'm Karen Wilkinson from Innovate UK KTN, and in this episode, Helen Trampin, Innovation and Technology Lead from the Innovate UK Healthy Aging Challenge, talks to Alosh K. Jones, co-founder and CEO of Cricket Cube. Cricket Cube are breaking down the barriers of ethnicity, age, and gender to get more people involved in playing cricket.
Hi, everyone. So I've been working with the Healthy Aging Challenge for 4 years now, and I'm very, very privileged to welcome one of our SBRI-funded social enterprises, Cricket Cube. Alosh is the CEO and founder, and I am actually going to let him introduce himself. And then if he could give us a flavour of what Cricket Cube is and its main aims for us, that'd be great. Thanks, Alosh.
Yeah, thank you so much, Helen, for having me. Yeah, my name is Alosh. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Cricket Cube, which we are based in Newcastle, and we deliver cricket sessions specifically for ethnic minorities and older adults. So that's our remit. We do have other sessions, but these are our main focus areas.
Brilliant, thank you. So, I mean, what I'd really like to understand, and I think it'd be really nice for the audience, is how you began this journey. So, you know, what inspired you to start this? You know, what were the main drivers behind it, and how did you make that decision on which direction to go in?
Well, I did a master's in sports management. I've been playing cricket since I was 4 or 5 years old, like everyone in India. So when I moved to the UK in 2018, and I didn't have that many opportunities to play cricket with the weather, you know, problems like that. And then in 2020, we decided that it might be a good option to start something to make sure that cricket is accessible for everyone, to make sure that it can be played regardless whether you've got access to a club system, whether you've got the hundreds of pounds you need to have to buy the cricket kit, etc. And we just decided to try if we can democratize cricket. And here we are.
So, well, just to understand a little bit more about what you hope the main outcomes from this program will be, because we, you know, obviously we've been working together for quite a long time now. I understand that quite well, but it would be good for our audience to kind of understand what you really hope that this program will have led to.
Yeah. For the UKRI funding, we were able to co-develop a specific program for South Asian older adults. We have found from market research and talking to so many older people within the South Asian community that there are not many targeted programs for them to be fit and healthy. It just wasn't working on whatever programs that was out there. They needed a more tailored approach that understands the cultural nuances, the religious sentiments, the community connections they have, and we decided that we could actually step in there because obviously cricket is the biggest game in South Asia. It's a religion, so we felt it's a perfect opportunity to develop Cricket Cube, but also help our community. I am also from the South Asian community, so I understand how people feel about these things, and we decided that we can co-develop something with the community leaders, participants, etc., and then make cricket accessible for people so they can come in every week, play cricket and find new connections, make new friends, and then, you know, be happy and healthy.
Do you think your lived experience and your background has actually made you a much better, shall we say, person to lead this type of project, because you do understand the challenges and the culture and what, you know, what the issues are there?
Yes, I would say that has helped me quite a lot. I mean, I've worked with older people on a personal level and also on a professional level, whether it's volunteering or, you know, even working with my own grandparents. For example, my grandmom, she had dementia, then we just didn't know about that because it wasn't a big thing in India. We thought that was so natural. And now, but I've learned more about it and learned how we can actually change these things, change even the perceptions within the community, and the lack of access to information like this through a program like this, it just made more sense for me to lead this, understanding how things were working in my community.
What do you think your biggest challenges have been? And, you know, which challenges have you overcome? And just, you know, tell us a little bit about the biggest challenge maybe that you've overcome and how you managed to do that.
I think that was going to take us a while.
Just pick one.
Yeah, I think, for example, to change perceptions within the community, that itself was a challenge. It is not an easy to change, obviously, with a theory of change. And it takes a long time to change perceptions and change how people would work, how they would behave. The small behavioral changes that makes the biggest impact, that takes time. And so the project was really helpful in that sense, because that kind of allowed us to have 4 to 6 weeks of trial sessions to get to more people, speak to them. And I think that was one of the biggest challenges, to ensure that someone who's living, let's say, a mile away from a session center, to just come to there, even though the session is not free, for them to actually get there, the transportation, what are the things that leading them? For example, we have Indian or South Asian snacks for them to come in, and that is actually a big driver. It's from just a sporting event, it becomes more of a community session. There's food, there's cricket, there's curry, you know, things like that. I think that's some of the challenges we have overcome. Just a quick challenge would be, another one that we are facing right now would be financial challenges, because South Asians, especially Bangladeshis and Pakistanis, they have the lowest median income across any ethnic minority in the ethnic group in the UK. And for them to pay for the sessions is just impossible. And physical activity is one of the first things that anyone cuts when there is a financial crunch. And that's a challenge that we have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do understand this, obviously, because, you know, we have worked together for a while. But again, it would be good for the audience to understand where you see the innovation in this program. I mean, I actually think it's quite obvious. But, you know, if you could just put it in your own words, because obviously, you know, we fund innovative projects. So, you know, where do you think the real innovation is in this particular project?
I think the innovation itself lies in the work we do with the community. So everything we do is actually informed by what the community wants. Obviously, we have to understand that South Asian community is quite large. You have Indians, Pakistanis, but within those regions itself, there will be subcategories. To understand how each of those subcategories perceive sports and perceive physical activity, that is one of the innovations that we have been able to do through the project. So we have been able to speak to Hindu temple leaders and Muslim mosque imams, work with the Sikh community. So these things, to give us an overall view of what each community, each sub-communities within the South Asian community needs, and then tailor programs with their needs. I think that has been one of the biggest innovations we had. I think this is where we are different from the mainstream options, where you have a gym and then you just ask people, there's a gym, go be active. It just doesn't work like that. We need to understand the nuances, and I think that's the innovation of the project comes from.
We understand really well that behavior change is one of the hardest things to actually initiate. So if you can look at the way we do it in a different way, like you are, obviously, you know, it has, you know, it really has that impact and benefit, doesn't it? Can you share, I would say, the major success you've had over the past couple of years through this program? What would you see as being the most, you know, amazing thing you've done over the past 2 years, because of the funding or because of the project?
Yeah, I think because of the funding, that obviously gives us a really good platform to grow from. So when we started delivering our first cricket sessions, which was the end of 2021, you know, because of COVID, even though we launched in 2020, we couldn't do anything proper for the first 18 months. But once we delivered our first session in December 2021, now we've got more than 30 sessions a month. So from one session a week, we've got 6 or 8 sessions going every week, and which I think it's absolutely incredible. We work in work with ethnic minority groups. We have got people from Ghana, Nigeria, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, all playing cricket together. And I think it just makes me so happy. And many of them haven't played cricket before. And while the communities from India and Pakistan, they have played cricket before. So there's actually a huge connect between, you know, generally, we don't have too many instances where, for example, black older adults and South Asian older adults working together. And this is one of the rare instances where someone from Pakistan saying to someone in Nigeria, oh, this is how you hold the bat. And I think I don't know how to quantify the financial benefits of those interactions, but I think it's absolutely great for the British community that we can build these relationships. Yeah, I think from growing from 1 to 30, I think that's a good growth, and we need to grow more. I think that's a good starting point, at least.
We've talked about this before, that was one of the unexpected things that came from this project, that the fact that you were bringing these different types of communities together, you didn't actually anticipate that happening in such a successful way. And also, you know, we talked before about the intergenerational aspect as well, where you've brought younger people in to work with the older adults, which has been really successful. Can you just say something about that as well?
Yeah, I think that's been quite good. So recently we had a session in Bristol. So we are based in the Northeast, but we are slowly expanding our footprint to other regions. So we work with the University of West of England. So we had a session with them, with several of them in Bristol, where our youngest kid was 4 years old and the oldest was 64 years old, and from different families. So I think that the information and the happiness and the new things each of them learn from each other, I think that's great. So we have heard where grandchildren helping older people to their grandparents to book sessions online, to call up the organizations to book for a new activity sessions, and then the grandparents teaching the children, oh, this is how you hold a bat, this is how you get the ball, collect the ball, throw the ball. Again, I think it is absolutely amazing in those respects. So we are now, again, another project with the support of Innovate UK Inclusive Innovation. So we are working with the University of West of England to create family backyard cricket for South Asian and Black minority families. And I think, yeah, so we want to go down in that innovation, inclusive innovation route, and make sure that health is for everyone.
You're collecting a lot of evidence and data around this project. So what do you really hope comes of this? What do you hope happens with this evidence and data? Where would you really like it to go? And, you know, what would you like the impact to be?
So we do not want to be an organization that collects all the information and then just uses for ourselves. We want to make sure that the rest of the providers like us have access to the data, and then they can also create their own programs to ensure ethnic minorities have what they want and what they are supposed to get. So we generally go into conferences, and we are working with the universities to publish some of the papers, working with Leeds Beckett University on a similar program. So, and then even speaking to other innovators, role modeling, things like that. So that's some of the places where I mentioned this is some of the data that we have. Get in touch with us. Let's collaborate. Let's do new things together based on the data we have. Let's get the data that you have, and then let's see if you can work with something like that. So I think that's one of the important bits, to make sure that there is not much compartmentalization of data. It is what we collect is for the entire community in the UK, so that it has to be propagated in such a way that other people will be able to use it, make sure that the communities are healthier and happier.
How has working in that way helped you achieve your goals? And, you know, it's an obvious thing that you wouldn't really want to work in isolation, but how have collaborations and partnerships really helped you to achieve your goals?
We work with lots of organizations, academic and other academic, commercial and other non-profit organizations. So from academics, we work with Northumbria University, West of England, Leeds Beckett, National Innovation Center for Aging, for example. So the academics, the researchers from those organizations give us the real cutting edge research, and also the previously their own experiences with the communities and the other studies that they have done. So we get to have a cache of information, of qualitative and quantitative information that they have done. And then we can we can work on top of it. There's no point in, you know, doing the same thing over again after 5 years just because we didn't know there was something like that. That's a waste of time and money. So I think those kind of collaborations has really helped us to create new things based on longitudinal data, for example, and then other nonprofit organizations. So we work with, for example, Active Families Northeast, even St. Vincent's in Newcastle. So these are all organizations with a history of helping groups similar to ourselves. And then it's so easy to work with them because we all have the same goals. We just want to make sure that the communities have what they need to have to be where they want to be. So it's quite easy. I don't know. I think everyone should be able to do that. And I think most of the people actually do that. So,
excellent answer. So what advice, I know this is a difficult one, but what main piece of advice would you give to entrepreneurs working in this area or starting to work in this area?
Talk to people. I think that's a very obvious answer to that, you know. But I think that's a main thing, to have those lines of communications open to the people you want to help. Without that, it's just not going to work, in my experience. So even if you have the best foolproof plan, and then someone might ask, oh, but I've got school that day. So that's, with that one question, you have to change everything. So I think you need to continue working with them and make sure that they're part of the experience and you are not designing something for them. You're actually designing something with them. And I think that would actually help in helping the community that you want to support. And I think that also brings in the buy-in. So if you just come up there and that, oh, we got this funding, we have created this, now let's all play cricket, they just would not feel involved, because how would they know it has been developed in the way that they want? And so I think that's really key. I think the other thing is that work with the universities, work with other organizations who has got a successful track record in the area, learn from their failures, and also learn from your own failures, because I'm guaranteed that you'd have many.
And so what's next? What's next for you?
Good question. So we are continuing to increase our number of sessions. So we are going into a number of care homes now. So I think that's a part of community that's been wholly inadequately supplied for in terms of physical activity. So we are going for weekly sessions in a care home group in the Northeast. So we want to continue doing that. We want to continue working with ethnic minorities, but on a digital level. Everyone is going digital these days. So we are also developing a healthy aging app, for people over the age of 50, to make sure that they will get personalized recommendations based on the data, for example, what they like, what kind of things they do during the day, what are their physical and mental conditions, and an ability for them to book nearby sessions, for example, such as ours or, you know, other providers. So that's another thing we are working on with the support of National Innovation Centre for Aging and Northumbria University. Fingers crossed we have success on both counts.
It's been a real privilege to work with you over the past few years, and I will be following your journey very, very closely, believe me. So, yeah, thanks, Alos. It's been really, really interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much, Helen, for having me and also supporting me over all these years. Without this, I'm sure that we would not have been sitting here.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. Thanks, Alos.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining Age Innovators, and watch out for more episodes. This series is brought to you by the Healthy Aging Challenge Community of Practice, hosted by Innovate UK.